Hello and welcome to the Dugout Debate podcast. Today we discuss financial fair play and football transfers.
We'll touch on the Neymar deal, the Premier League window closing earlier, and the general growth of transfers in football. So, Chris, we're going to talk about financial fair play, but firstly, what is UEFA's financial fair play scheme?
Well, luckily, Tim, they have a very helpful All You Need to Know section on their website, which makes things a lot easier. And so they start off by saying financial fair play was approved in 2010 and the first assessments kicked off in 2011, so it is relatively young. Since then, clubs that have qualified for UEFA competitions have had to prove they do not have overdue payables towards other clubs, their players and social tax authorities throughout the season. So to put this in simple terms, they have to prove they've paid all their bills. And since 2013, clubs have also been assessed against break-even requirements, which require clubs to balance their spending with their revenues and restrict clubs from accumulating debt. In assessing this, they use something called the Independent Club Financial Control Body, which sounds very exciting.
Wow, you can definitely get an abbreviation out of that one.
Yeah, they call it CFCB, I think.
There we go.
Which analyses each season 3 years worth of club financial figures for all clubs in UEFA competitions, and the first sanctions and conditions for clubs not fulfilling that break-even requirement were set for the first assessment in May 2014.
Something that I caught while I was just looking stuff up at, which I didn't know before, is that the figures that they get for spending and that sort of stuff, they don't include sort of stadium improvements and investment in youth and stuff to do with actually running the club. It is pretty much transfer spending and player wages and agent fees and that sort of thing.
It's very strict. It doesn't encompass pretty much everything that you expect a football club to do.
So transfer fees have skyrocketed fairly recently, haven't they? I mean, we've had the recent Neymar deal, which was, £198 million. And before that, you know, we hadn't really properly reached the £100 million mark. So how about you give us a little bit of a background on the growth of transfer fees and why this might have happened?
So put very simply, TV revenue has gone absolutely sky high. It's gone up a huge amount over the last few years, and transfer fees are very closely related to club revenue. So to take the Premier League, for example, each club gets an equal share of £35,301,989, and that is just the UK TV rights.
So am I right in saying that each club gets £35 million?
Yes, they each get £35 million. They have a share of £706 million.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then that's not including overseas money. So they each club gets £39,090,596 from overseas TV deals, which meant that the champions Chelsea last season got a total payment of £150 million when you include their prize money fee, facilities fee, and the central commercial deal as well, which is just an absolute ludicrous amount of money. That general growth in money coming into the game had a huge impact on transfer fees. So while we look at examples like Zinedine Zidane moving from Juventus to Real Madrid in 2001 for around £46 million, which was interestingly paid in installments even before financial fair play was around, that was unsurprisingly a world record fee at that time, and obviously is still a considerable amount of money in today's market. But we look at examples like Ronaldo. Someone kindly call him Fat Ronaldo, or should we call him Brazilian Ronaldo?
Let's go Brazilian.
He moved from Barcelona to Inter Milan, and they spent £19.5 million on him in 1997, which looks a ludicrously cheap deal now. But obviously, that needs to be taken into consideration with the club's revenue at the time, and particularly the money received from TV revenue back then was nowhere near what it is today. An example of that, for instance, is that Italian clubs dominated in monetary terms from the 1950s to the 1990s and broke the world transfer record no fewer than 18 times in that span. But wow. But the money has really dried up in Italy since, thanks to a lot of clubs not owning their stadiums post-Italia 90. And with the clubs not owning their stadiums, they find themselves falling into rising debt because they don't get matchday revenue and they no longer can afford those high transfer fees.
Well, I suppose, sorry, something else that comes into it is just inflation. I mean, the 19 million figure of Ronaldo means, you know, not much to us today because, you know, it's over 20 years ago.
It's sheer inflation, you're right. Exactly. But also, unsurprisingly, Real Madrid on their own have broken the transfer record 5 times because of their immense revenue streams. That's thanks in no small part to the TV deal that they have. It's not done league-wide in Spain, unlike the Premier League, but it's been negotiated independently by each club. Therefore, Real Madrid are pretty much on TV every week, not only in Spain, but in the UK as well. And compare that to a team, I don't know, like Celta Vigo or someone like that, that wouldn't be on TV every single week. And they're not going to get considerably less compared to what Real Madrid are going to get from that TV deal that they've each negotiated. So that means that clubs like Real Madrid are going to be able to have a lot more financial clout on the transfer market than other teams will be.
Yeah, it does. It does feel like a bit of a duopoly over in Spain. Oh, I suppose Atletico Madrid have occasionally popped up in there, but really, it's Real Madrid and Barcelona's unique ability to secure the TV deals from themselves. And essentially, if you are Celta Vigo, the only real time you're going to be on telly is if you're playing Real Madrid and Barcelona, isn't it? So
sadly, that is the reality. Yeah. But as you've already mentioned, the fluctuation in inflation and in currency exchange rates has also made it difficult for us to see exponential growth in transfer fees. It muddies the waters a little bit. But what is clear and unsurprising is that transfer sums and locations follow the money.
Yes.
So, which is probably why China are going to be an interesting proposition in global football going forward. But I'm sure that's a topic for another podcast.
So yeah, that'll be interesting, and we should certainly look at that in the podcast in another podcast. But sort of along this note, like I mentioned earlier, the big Neymar transfer, 198 million. Do you think that's going to be the new norm? These sky high prices, and has football changed forever, or do you think it was just a one off and we'll sort of return to quote unquote normality?
I can't see that personally being the norm. I think that was a fairly ludicrous situation. It is worth mentioning that there's always something of a knock-on effect with these massive transfers. So like Torres moving for 50 million to Chelsea meant Andy Carroll went for 35 million. Neymar leaving obviously meant Ousmane Dembele was going from Borussia Dortmund to Barcelona for about 100 million, which is another ludicrous amount of money. And it's a simple case of supply and demand. In both cases, the selling club, Newcastle or Borussia Dortmund, knew the buying club had the money, and they didn't have a lot of time to find a replacement. So were somewhat desperate that therefore the selling club could name a much inflated price. So there is a bit of a knock-on effect, but I can't actually see that these transfer fees are going to reach the levels of Neymar for some time.
Just on a little sidetrack while I was thinking of that, I'm pretty sure I've seen it on Reddit. Somebody did sort of a track of the Neymar deal leading all the way to, with the knock-on effects and that sort of thing, to Kevin Wimmer going to Stoke for £18 million, which is, you know, you wouldn't think Neymar, Kevin Wimmer, but you never know, maybe in the future when Stoke reach the Champions League final against PSG, they might be facing up against
I'm looking forward to seeing that later.
100%. Going back to whether it's going to be the new norm or not, I agree with you. I don't think so. There's actually a very interesting press release, which I'll link over in our extra reading section of the website, that PricewaterhouseCoopers or PwC released. And they suggest that the fee for Neymar that we saw of £198 million comes around 5 to 7 years earlier than expected. This comes off the back of figures they have in the past, where the world record transfer tends to be around 2.5 to 3 times the average of the next 20 largest fees. So at the moment, the average of the next 20 largest fees is about £35 million. Pounds for that Neymar figure to be reached, it needs to be around 65 million odd pounds, and that value is set to be reached by around 2025 with a 9% growth in average transfer figures over the next 10 years. But the final thing they essentially say in this little release is that the fees of over 100 million will be pretty much normal by 2025. Again, this is alongside further increases in TV rights and sponsorship, improved revenues and spending power of all these clubs. I think that they're forecasting this primarily because there are big markets that are still sort of untapped, certainly TV-wise. The Asian market's still pretty good, even subcontinental Asia is you know, there are loads of people there. They're not all necessarily watching the Premier League, so there's still a lot of scope for increases there.
Of course. I guess there's always outliers then within that, so that like Neymar, there was Zinedine Zidane back in 2001 going for a crazy amount, but crucially it is pretty much linked to revenue on the most part. So saying that, how can clubs get around that, it being linked to revenue quite as much?
Okay, so this essentially comes down to, I wouldn't call it clever accounting, but just a way of managing fees. They don't seem quite as daunting as they once appear. So in the media and that sort of thing, we tend to talk about, I'm not the media, well, maybe I am. We tend to talk about net transfer spend. So, you know, Tottenham sell Kevin Winner for £18 million and then buy Davinson Sanchez for £40 million. So we've basically, you know, we've paid, what's that, £22 million for a new centre-back when we already had one. While that's quite good, you know, just for common rhetoric, it doesn't actually properly portray how clubs actually deal with their finances. And the process by which clubs cope with these large fees is a process called amortisation. And what that is... as I said, a process by which clubs can get around very large transfer fees and player wages by being clever with how they show the costs for buying and keeping a player in their accounts. So we're going to enter the realms of fantasy for a second just to demonstrate how amortization works. Chris, I'm going to take you on a journey.
Oh, I'm excited, Tim. I'm strapped in, ready to go.
A few years' time, Woking FC of the Vanarama National League have suddenly discovered me in a park somewhere, where I've developed a right foot that doesn't shank it every time. And I've hit in 50 goals in a season. I've sent them straight into the Football League. League 2, we're up there. Go Woking. And the final Thursday before the season begins the following year, Tottenham wake up. Daniel Levy gets his checkbook out. And he starts doing some transfer dealings. They decide that I'm an excellent player. And I should be bought from Woking for an astonishing £50 million. I mean, wow. Tim Hosbury worth £50 million. Totally realistic. I drive a hard bargain with the chairman and I convince him to give me a weekly wage of £120,000 for a five-year deal. £120,000, sorry, a week for a five-year deal. We'll pretend I don't have an agent, so there's no bonuses there, and we'll also forget that I ask for any bonuses like appearance fees and increases in wage after a certain number of games and that sort of stuff. Right, so assuming they want to buy more players and pass financial fair play, they wouldn't want to lump the entirety of my transfer fee and my wages into the books for 1 year. Instead, what they'll do is they'll spread the cost of the transfer fee over the length of my contract. So in this case, I have a five-year contract. So in the books, they'll put it down as the £15 million transfer fee spread over the 5 years of my contract. So that's £10 million a year. Simple maths. Alongside this, they'll need to include my wages for the year as well. So this will be £120,000 times 52 weeks in a year. So that equates to £6.24 million a year of wages for me. Therefore, in the year's books, the cost of having me as a player will be the £10 million transfer fee that's allocated to this particular year, plus my £6.24 million in wages. So in total, in the accounts, I would cost the club £16.24 million per year for the length of my contract. That's a lot less scary than £50 million, then plus my wages in just 1 year. And that's how you can sort of get around financial fair play, where they need you to break even because you're not making sort of a £70 million loss in 1 year, for instance. So that's very cool. There is a very, very good video by UMaxit, or depending on when you're watching it, because they're just changing now. So they're just changing now to TIFO. We've put the link on our website. It's really good. It's 5 minutes long, and it basically explains amortization. But I've made my own example, and hopefully it's a little bit easier to connect with. So in the future, sort of a year later, I've had an absolute stinker, and I've only scored 8 or 9 goals, and Tottenham just decide that it's not worth it anymore. And Stoke come in and buy me for £35 million after a year. So the net spend would show that Spurs have lost 15 million quid on me, which is, you know, obviously that's what's happened. But that's not how Tottenham would report it. So they've already accounted for a fifth of the transfer fee, i.e. 10 million in their books already from having me in the previous year. So that leaves 40 million pounds of the transfer fee unaccounted for on their books. So the 35 million that Stoke paid accounts for most of this. So therefore, there is a loss of 5 million pounds on the deal. So does that make sense,
Yeah,
Chris?
That makes sense, like, to
are
me.
Are you keeping yeah. track with me? Okay. However, after I'm sold, Tottenham don't have to pay for me anymore. So the 16.24 million a year cost to keep me is now not on the books. Therefore, on the next account, it will show an annual profit improvement of 11.24 million versus last year. Okay, so that's the 5 million loss on that transfer fee. So they got 35 million instead of 40 million, minus the 16.24 million. Deducted from the 16.24 million a year that it costs. So they actually make a profit improvement of
11.24
versus the year before. So with a sale like that, where they might have actually made a loss in the books, they'll present it as a profit. So as I said, it is a bit complicated. I have done the maths. If you do want it, I'll pop that on our extra reading as well, and I've logically laid it out so it will make sense. But yeah, again, that UMax it or TIFO video, depending on when you're watching it, will be in the description. It's well worth a watch. It's actually a really good channel. We're not paid by them, obviously, but it's worth a subscribe as well. So I think I've done enough talking. That was quite a lot, wasn't it?
That was, wasn't it? That is nice and complicated, but I it's really interesting to see how it is broken down like that. And it makes you realise that clubs have a lot of work to do to try and get that all within financial fair play. But it's not just simply the big figure that you see at the start. It is broken down a hell of a lot.
The best way to think of it actually is a lot like a phone contract, because you're effectively paying for the phone and your tariff at the same time. So the phone is the transfer fee, and the tariff is the wages that you have to pay. And you don't pay that all at once, obviously, do you? If you have a contract, then you spread that over the length of the 2 years, which is essentially exactly the same as what's going on in this situation.
I really like that analogy. That's
God,
very good.
God, I am good at analogies.
So bearing all of that you've just said in mind, big question on my lips is, are PSG in breach of financial fair play with the Neymar and Mbappe deals?
I'm going to do the classic Tim thing, sit on that fence and go, they're probably not in breach of FFP, but I don't think that they won't get seriously looked into because of all the stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've just talked about amortization, and the figures that are involved in the Neymar deal are way bigger, with 198 million and 515,000 quid a week, depending on where you look. Spread over the cost of his contract, it will be sort of around the 65 million quid a year mark. And that's not including bonuses or agent fees, which, you know, I haven't even thrown in there or anything like that.
Yeah.
In my mind, PSG have spent this in the hope they get more interest from the South American and Asian markets. So try and get in more TV revenue that way. Shirt sales is often cited, but that doesn't really ever make too much of a difference in the grand scheme of revenue, because of how the pot of money going to the kit manufacturer and the club works. But, you know, they're trying to win the Champions League. So with the extra money they could get from that, so if they won the Champions League, that's an extra sort of 15 or so million for just getting to the final. They've never done that before. So they'd obviously want to improve their revenue through prize money. But the big thing that they'd have to do is sell players. I think we both agree that's what they're going to have to do. For instance, they've already sold Aurier to Spurs. Matuidi's gone to Juve, I think.
Yeah.
A couple of other deals. And then they've got some players going out on loan. So Kuchoriak and Hesse, and then some other players like Di Maria and Pastore are sort of coming towards the end of their contracts, and they're getting towards their 30s, so they may well be moved on. And I think that to be able to get away with all this spending, I mean, I've just said Neymar, we haven't even gone over Mbappe, who next year is going to cost them 166 million quid. So yeah, they're going to have to get some of these guys off their books. And obviously, like with the creative account, not creative accountancy, with the amortization, it'll actually, a lot of these players will come up as a profit improvement versus last year. I think that's how they're going to do it. But they've got to sell enough players at a good enough price to make that happen. And clubs will know that PSG have got this issue, so they won't go in quite as high as PSG might necessarily want them to. Because I think, for instance, 30 million quid for Aurier is a steal, but there were off-the-pitch problems.
Yeah.
Anyway.
From off the top of my head, the Matuidi fee to Juventus was absolutely ludicrous as well for how good a player and how experienced he is. So.
But then again, he's 30, 31 now, I think, isn't he? So there is that as well.
That is a very interesting point, though, that you raise. I didn't think about that going the other way around. I did think about clubs knowing that you've got the money if you've just sold someone for a lot of money. But if you're trying to make the money back on financial fair play, all the clubs actually know that as well. So they can, when they're putting in their bids for some of your players, they know that you're desperate for the money. So you can try and squeeze a bit of cash out of that. That is a very interesting way of looking at it.
Well, in the last week, actually, there was an incident with Cavani and Neymar over a penalty, wasn't there? They got a little bit fractious. I think a penalty was won and both players wanted to take it, and there was a bit of a sort of, well, full-on argument.
Yeah, a lot of ego there.
Well, 100%. And it's safe to say they're not necessarily the best of friends in the minute. And I could envisage a future very soon where somebody like Cavani is sold, who's literally peaking right now, ship him out to an Italian team, AC Milan, say, for instance, who are looking for somebody in that position. And they can make a really big dent into this sort of, into the FFP deficit that they've got at the minute.
Yeah.
And then somebody like Verratti, who's also sought by Barcelona, get rid of him.
Yeah, I like this fantasy football where we're suddenly becoming the manager and we can decide who PSG are going to get rid of to make way.
But these are just events that are somewhat likely.
Yeah.
It could but just be the PSG are just going, stuff it, we've got like 3 years until the FFP punishments will actually happen.
Yeah.
Let's just win the Champions League and then deal with what comes later.
They'd clearly had enough of buying players in a certain bracket, as you've already mentioned, all of those players that were around the 30 to 50 million kind of mark. They thought, we're not going to get anywhere with spending that money on those players. We're going to have to go out and get one of the world's top five players. And that is the only way we're gonna get to where we want to be, which is an interesting way of doing it. And it seems that they're gonna mix any other way in the squad that they can to get there.
It actually brings me up to another point. What do you reckon the driver of this sort of, not necessarily the transfer fee, but suddenly the need for clubs to go out and go, we've got to go and get this marquee player to just transform the team ability-wise. Do you reckon it's a sort of an insatiable appetite for new players from the fans, or do you think it's board level, they need instant success rather than just sort of having a year or two to develop a player from your academy, so you need to go and buy those players because you're just filling holes that you can't fill?
There is obviously an appetite and a pressure from the board above that are getting managers to go out and buy these players to get the results that they want. But I do think there is, as you've already mentioned, an insatiable appetite from fans for transfers. No club can sit still, as you've already mentioned. Davinson Sanchez was pretty late in the day for Spurs, and they were probably being mocked lousy till that point in the summer. But fans definitely help fuel the transfer cycle, because as a Spurs fan, you would know, you were sitting at home thinking, what the hell are we doing? Everyone else in the league is splashing the cash. Although we got a top four finish last year, if we don't actually splash the cash again, we might be left behind. There's definitely that fear from fans, I think, that drives them to want transfers.
See, this is where I'm a little bit different, possibly, to a lot of fans. I think coaching is very undervalued now. I think that particularly in the Premier League, maybe not so abroad because there's a far greater homegrown contingent. But we've seen in the fairly recent past the sort of work that some of the best managers and coaches have done to transform teams without actually having to buy people in. I mean, I know people don't necessarily like Big Sam, but you know, he was a coach, that's what he was, and he drilled his teams in a particular way that made them really difficult to beat. They'd get the odd goal and they'd find themselves safe. Marco Silva last season with Hull, he did a brilliant job with a team that was, you know, distinctly average players. Paul Clement with Swansea, and even Pochettino at Tottenham. I think he's one of the last few sort of great coaches rather than head than manager.
Because yes, I think Pep has
sort of started drifting towards far more of tactician manager rather than the pulling players that he possibly was before, sort of pulling players around. But certainly Pochettino, if you just look at Danny Rose and Kyle Walker, he turned one of them from a dodgy thorn in Tottenham's side into a rose, quite literally, and the other one into the most expensive English player ever. Coaching just doesn't really happen that much anymore, which is a shame. But it's just sort of, I think it is that insatiable nature of fans and the board just to get instant success.
Yeah, you're right. To grow a player takes a lot more time than buying one in, doesn't it? So people want instant success. I think the big example of that is probably the biggest name in management's Jose Mourinho, and he's definitely not a coach. I've not seen him improve a player. He just goes out and splashes the cash wherever he is, whether it be Real Madrid or Man United. He's always had money to spend, and he's always bought in the players that he wants rather than improving what he's already got.
Pretty much anyone who dreams of being a manager, not a head coach. I mean, I've got literally no football experience. As much as I wish I did, my experience is essentially on a field in school shoes, absolutely belting the ball as far away from the goal as I could. So if I was suddenly plonked into the managerial role, I certainly wouldn't be doing the coaching. I'd hire coaches, but I would be doing tactical stuff because I've just got no experience of the game itself.
There's no doubt that coaching is the most difficult part of it as well. So it is easier to buy players in. But to go on to a slightly different point on this pressure to have transfers, I looked at Barcelona and Real Madrid and the presidents that they've had elected previously. And it was very interesting that when Florentino Perez was first elected in 2000, it was largely due to a promise to buy Luis Figo for 30 million from arch rivals Barca. And he also promised that at least one Galactico a summer would then be secured afterwards. So they got Zidane, Ronaldo and Beckham in the summers after that. It's an extreme example, but you must admit you get excited when your club signs a new player, and they even got elected by it from the Real Madrid fans getting excited by the names that they were mentioning in their election process. What do you think of that?
I agree. I think that whole Spanish bubble is an entirely different one. I mean, we don't have presidents and stuff to deal with over in the UK in the Premiership. But I think there are a lot of very clued up fans who have their opinions about what players they should be going for. But even with that, say you're Tottenham, Arsenal, Man City, if you say I'm going in for Lamar from Monaco, everyone would get excited. But I think there is a sense that we don't want the game going into splashing the cash for very average players. I think, particularly in this country, there is still an urge for a great sort of English team, to sort of rise out of the ashes. And then, for instance, we go spend £30 million on Moussa Sissoko. as much as he tries hard, we spent £30 million on him.
A very pointed example there, Tim. Yes, that one's hurt. I can feel it.
It's not hurt. It's just I can see the thinking behind it. I don't want to go into Tottenham too much, but I can see the thinking behind it. But it's not really worked, has it?
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, we won't go into that anymore.
We can stop there. Yeah, that's fine. I suppose the final thing to cover, which is poignant, like I briefly alluded to earlier in the future of Tim as a Woking striker. The Premier League window is going to be shutting earlier now. It's going to be shutting the Thursday before the season starts. What sort of impact do you think this will have?
I think it's a very interesting move. It's obviously come off the back of complaints from several high-profile managers who have faced distractions over having players' deals being talked out while the season's already underway. The decision to enforce the change obviously isn't going to happen in the European leagues. It's just a Premier League thing. And it even wasn't unanimous within the Premier League. There were 14 clubs that voted in favour of the amendment, which was the minimum needed for the plans to be approved, while Man United, Man City, Watford, Swansea and Crystal Palace all voted against it, while Burnley abstained from voting on it. It's going to be interesting to see how it works. So whilst players and managers seem to be happy that there'll be no distractions once the season has started does leave the Premier League clubs possibly at a disadvantage to their continental neighbours. Could they come and steal a player and then Premier League teams won't be able to replace them? But in the long term, it may well be that La Liga, the Bundesliga, Liga, Eredivisie and the Serie A may follow suit. So I've got a quote here from Giuseppe Marotta, who's the Director General of Juventus. And he backed the decision by the Premier League and he said that Serie A should follow suit. So it might be that Europe does fall in line and that everyone ends up a winner. It does all finish before the start of the season. But in this particular upcoming summer, it's going to be quite a difficult one because the early finish means that the Premier League transfer window is shorter, although it is still 12 weeks long in line with FIFA rules. There's just a 3.5 week gap between the World Cup final on the 15th of July and the start of the Premier League season on the 9th of August. This means that Premier League clubs have just 25 days after the conclusion of the World Cup to complete any signings, because obviously it's going to be difficult to do medicals, etc. During the World Cup. So that they've actually created a rod for their own back by bringing it in a World Cup year. That's going to make it very difficult.
Sorry, just to jump in, that is an excellent point. I didn't actually think about that. That is a World Cup year. If you're okay for me to just jump in.
Yeah, no probs.
Do I think this will have a big impact on the Premier League? I don't think so. I slightly disagree with some of the rhetoric that's out there and actually a couple of things that you said. Yes, players, clubs in La Liga and around Europe, certainly, they might well want to be poaching players from Premier League clubs after the transfer window is shut. But the money is in the Premier League and... You know, they're not desperate for it. You know, well, we've already said 70 odd million in TV revenue on its own. There's no compulsion for any Premier League club to sell. We've definitely seen that change this summer. I mean, we've seen Van Dijk stay, we've seen Sanchez stay, we've seen Ozil to an extent, and Coutinho. All of those guys 2 summers ago would have gone because the clubs want the money. Now the clubs don't need the money. So they can just go, nope, you're in this contract. You signed a 5-year contract. You've still got a year. You've got two. You've got 3 years left in it. You need to honour it until we're ready to sell you. And I think the Premier League clubs will just be stubborn and just go, once our window is shut, there is no more business. You can throw your toys out the pram as much as you like, but, you know, you've got to stay.
Yeah, that is a very fair point. I think English clubs would be confident that, given their vast financial strength, that they could resist big money offers. As you say, we've seen a precedent for it this summer with Philippe Coutinho refusing to go to Barcelona. And actually, interestingly, the Premier League executive chairman, Richard Scudamore, has actually commented on this, saying that competition integrity was the main motivation for the move, with clubs eager to stop their domestic rivals poaching players after the first day of the season, rather than being worried about European teams poaching their players. I don't think they were worried about that when they were factoring it in.
Well, I suppose we'll just round up quickly and just sort of answer our main question. Is the bubble going to burst? And is this serious spending going to ruin the game?
So I think it's going to carry on going up. I can't really see this trend suddenly stopping for no apparent reason. Before we complain about football becoming too money orientated and the fees being talked about are becoming ridiculous in some cases, as we've talked about with Neymar, we have to look at the fact that a lot of this is caused by us fans. So the money that we spend on match day goes directly to buying and playing for players mostly. Some think that this is unfair and something should be done about it, possibly a salary cap or something like that. Something else we could talk about for another podcast, because I'm definitely in that camp. But ultimately, as it currently stands, fans would rather pay the money and see them sign a 20-goal-a-season striker from Argentina or Uruguay rather than see their team struggle. So I think that's going to carry on going. Fans are just going to want their teams to have success no matter what.
I agree with you to an extent. I also think the spending is going to continue. I don't think we're going to see a Neymar figure again anytime soon. I think PSG is a very, very unique club.
That was an anomaly for sure,
and you almost have to take it in isolation that they've just done these two big deals. But going back, sort of just all the money going into the clubs, as you say, can be spent on transfer fees and that sort of thing, and that comes from the fans. But at the end of the day, if a club thinks a player is worth a certain amount and they are willing to buy him for that, then that's his value. We can talk all day long about how I don't think Sissoko is worth 30 million. Tottenham did, so they bought him. It's like, it's supply and demand. That's just what it is. And I think us as normal people, we can't understand these figures, but football is a business. And to throw your own personal experiences with money and that sort of thing onto it is now not appropriate. Gone are the days where you'd catch old, you know, Gazza down the pub. You're not going to find Gareth Bale anywhere near a pub. Probably.
Yeah. Players don't get trains to the games anymore. They get exclusive coaches.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Dugout Debate. We hope you've enjoyed it a lot. Please do give us a little recommendation to anyone that you think might find this interesting. Or if you're listening to it on iTunes, give us a cheeky review. We might read some of the good ones out next week if we get any. Remember, we do our halftime team talks where we'll address any questions that you want dealing with from this episode. So make sure you give that a listen as well. Chris, where can people find us?
You can follow us on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, on @dugout_debate.
And we've also changed our website name. It's not too different. We've basically just got rid of the .wordpress. So it's now www.dugoutdebatepodcast.com. We hope you'll join us again very soon for our next episode.